Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Marlon Ranger. Of course, this is the Sports Lounge, chain without a key, locked out without a key. The magician, and of course, my man, Mr. Lou Maddox. What's going on, sir?
Not much.
Yes, a lot of propaganda going on, right? Big time.
Yeah, I guess so.
Of course, now I guess the final rounds of the playoffs have been set. Conference finals are in play. And also said a bit of a big surprise for me on several fronts. Guess we could start off with the first. And I wouldn't necessarily call this a surprise because I predicted what was going to happen between the Bulls and the Cavaliers. Gone in six games. If you've ever noticed or ever paid attention, you would have noticed and known that every time the Bulls win the first game against LeBron, they usually lose the next four or four out of five as this series went, which was slightly different. And this was obviously the same result as it's been over the past course of the, 5 years. What do you make of this, Lou? Does Thibodeau stay? Is the problem Rose? Is the problem Butler? What happened in this series and what caused it to be what it was from your perspective?
Well, I don't think Thibodeau is staying. Now, there's been word out there that the Bulls plan on keeping him. Yeah, I don't believe that for a second. But on top of that, it just didn't do what they were supposed to do. You know, when the team, and this has happened, you know, they had three chances to win three guaranteed games against the Cavs. And, of course, that was the first two games when J.R. Smith was out with suspension. And they only managed to win one of those games when they should have won both. And even coming up to this last game where they got eliminated, Kyrie Irving went out the game with injury. So you had nothing in the backcourt to control the tempo for the Cavs. And, you know, Derrick Rose and Butler could pretty much, you know, do what they want offensively. And that never happened. And plus, Joakim Noah pretty much, he had a real up and down game in this series. And of course, pretty much most of the series, Pau Gasol was out. But they just didn't do what they needed to do to put the Cavs away. And they could have, but they didn't step on their throats when they were down. So I think this is a whole, I really can't put it on just one player. The whole team failed.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. And when you look, you take this, you look at it from a distance, they basically threw it away. They gave this series up when they could have had an opportunity to put their foot on their neck, you know, especially in those first two games. Now, they ended up winning game one, of course, as you know, by 7 points when they had, when it was on the road against Cleveland. Game two is where it all fell apart for me. That was the perfect opportunity. J.R. Smith gone. Kyrie Irving injured, of course, as you know, Kevin Love gone, and they did not take advantage. And from that point on, it was a wrap. It was game over. And, you know, they tried to make a little bit of a push. You know, they was up to one, but it was almost like you just knew it wasn't going to last and it bared itself out. Hence me making for the pick. I don't see Thibodeau coming back. Him and management basically don't like each other. So the relationship is gone as far as it can possibly go. So I expect to see him gone within the next few weeks. As far as the rest of the team, Noah gave his all as far as defensively, which he normally does, but he needs to develop a better offensive game because they need more. As you know, Gasol got injured, wasn't himself late in the series, and he couldn't, you know, reclaim his glory of past or earlier this season. Derrick Rose, and I've said this, and, you know, I've taken a lot of criticism when I did make this or mention this. He is not a top 10 player, in my opinion. He shrunk in big spots outside of that game-winning shot that he had in game three. But ultimately, you can't, you know, shoot 29% to 20% in the fourth quarter of any playoff game. That's not really, you know, coming to the aid of your team when they need you, being a leader. And, of course, Jimmy Butler came out hot, and he just kind of fizzled out in this series. And it's amazing how many injuries the Cavs had and still were able to manage and destroy the Bulls. They basically gave up on game six, didn't bring their lunch pails. They just needed to just take their bags and go home. It was a wrap. It was an embarrassment, to be quite honest. So I don't see Thibodeau staying. I see him gone, and I don't know who you bring in there, Scott Brooks, perhaps. Who knows? We'll see what's on the market come next season or maybe early summer to see what they're going to do with the Bulls. Doesn't look bright for me, though. Looking at the other game, of course, you had Washington and Atlanta, and I figured Washington would have came back and won that one, especially after, you know, point guard came off injuries, and I'm not going to say his name. You say his name because you know his name. I'm not really so fond of him at times, and I think he kind of choked, you know, John Wall. I'll say his name. John Wall somewhat choked in this situation. I expected him to come through. Who did show up was Paul Pierce, and I'm very surprised at his age this late in his career that he's still doing what he's doing. Obvious Hall of Famer. Just wasn't enough. Can't do it all by yourself, and they kind of failed to come up big in this situation. And I was especially a little bit disappointed in Bradley Beal as well. So although that could be Atlanta's doing, and they could be a lot better than what we're giving them credit for, and we'll see, because that's a pretty stout, solid team, and they've managed to go ahead and weather the storm despite all the setbacks, and they will be playing Cleveland and have the home field advantage. They could possibly make this a seven-game series. It's kind of what I see. We'll have to, you know, stay tuned and pay attention. But from your standpoint, Lou, when you look at the makeup of the Bullets and where they went wrong, I should say the Wizards, no longer the Bullets, what key things did you notice? Yeah, I know, I went back. What key things did you notice that they just failed to do as you know, being having an opportunity and taking advantage of them having the ability to knock off Atlanta?
They rushed everything, which was very especially towards the end of the game, which was very uncharacteristic for the way they've been playing the whole playoffs. You know, Wall was making, you know, bad decisions, rushing towards the end, Beal as well. I mean, Paul Pierce didn't have a good game. He went like 1-for-7. Nene didn't have a good game either. Guatat didn't either. But, you know, those main guys, you know, Beal and Wall, they were out of sync towards the end. They tried to make things happen, and they played hard, but they tried to play too hard. And that's a possible thing to do, because when you play too hard, you get out of sync of, you know, keeping things under control. And that pretty much what led to what happened at the end. Now, Paul Pierce, he did come through with a last-second shot, but it was a second too late coming off of his hand, like half a second too late. But they could have easily won this game by probably at least 5 points if they just wasn't rushing things towards the end.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely see it the same way. But nevertheless, Atlanta's going to face off against Cleveland, and we have our conference finals matchup, and we'll get into the breakdown of that later on. But let's get further into the Western Conference, and obviously Golden State woke up once they was down 2-1, and as you know, that young man, Steph Curry, came back to life, proved why he's in the MVP, and shut that series down 4-2, won 3 straight. They look like they're back to hot, and I think they're the best team in the Western Conference, as we'll get into the other game that really was very, very hurtful. But nevertheless, what's going on here, that backcourt really stepped up, and that defense stepped up against Memphis, and of course, not the overstate anything. We know that Memphis offense really isn't, you know, the beacon of light or anything that would be even remotely close to, you know, something innovative. But nevertheless, that defense that Golden State served and reserved over the course of the last three games was spectacular. They turned a lot of turnovers into points, made key shots, were basically unstoppable, looked like the Golden State team we've been seeing the whole season. So, you know, I don't know what else to say. Right now they're probably the best team in the NBA. And I think that's evident because of what I predicted out of the best team in the West, who basically has been eliminated. So you go ahead and take it from there. And I think from what I saw, the way Golden State handled Memphis, especially in those last three games, that's the best team in the NBA right now. I expect them to go all the way, and I expect them to win. It just looks like they're on a big-time push. I don't think anybody can step in front of them and really stop that offense. You know, they can slow them down for a bit, but then when it gets rolling, it's finished, it's done. They find ways to just totally break teams down. That's basically what I saw. Iguodala especially coming off the bench, big time, big move, came up big, and it showed. So what's your synopsis?
Yep, that's pretty much what I said for Golden State to even, you know, to have a better chance against Memphis was Iguodala and Livingston stepping up off the bench, and both of them did that. Now, on Memphis' side, you're still struggling on defense because Tony Allen played, but only played for 5 minutes. He still was 100%. So your defense is pretty much a wrap from there. However, Vince Carter did step up for him with like 16 off the bench. But still, you don't have the defense there, and Jeff Green is still struggling with that team. Now, coming into the offseason for Memphis, they need shooters. They don't have any shooters on the team, not one. Everybody is a slasher. Everybody in the guard position. You have Courtney Lee, Tony Allen, Vince Carter, Jeff Green. These are guys that are swingmen. You know, they drive to the lane. You know, they play decent defense, but none of them are real outside shooters. They don't have one solid outside shooter on their team other than Conley, who's probably the only decent three-point shooter on their team. So that's the one weakness of this Memphis team is no outside shooting. Everything is inside, and mid-range.
You know, that's the thing. They brought that coach in there to bring his analytics to the game and add to that offensive prowess, and it just quite didn't work out. They basically did the same thing like Hollis did, you know, use big defense, big starch, tough interior defense, and just, you know, bullied everybody. And that's basically what happened, especially midway through the season. I would say they abandoned the whole analytics field. So they're going to have to bring in somebody with some type of offensive prowess to get that team to run well, because from what we saw, you know, they matched up well, and they did uniquely, you know, good against the Portland team. But then now when they had to face off, wait a minute, did they play Portland or did they play Dallas? I can't remember. Well, anyway, basically in the first round of the playoffs, they looked and matched up pretty well. They looked good, and they did look good for the first three games against Golden State, but ultimately Golden State's offense overpowered them, and they didn't have anything to return firepower with. You know, it's just, you got to have some kind of offense. And that's just really the basis of what went on in that series. So with that said, we can ride along roll to what happened today in the other game, which is a big disappointment in my eyes. How in the world, you know, and this is the second time this has happened to Doc Rivers, and no offense, but he has to bear some responsibility in the case. Up 3-1 and end up losing a series. 3-1. You go home, and they had multiple opportunities to close this out. I mean, they pretty much mailed it in game 5. Game 6, they had a 19-point lead in the fourth quarter, going into the fourth quarter. And here, they basically was out of the game early and didn't have enough to go ahead and withstand the onslaught. The Clippers have been eliminated. And you would have thought once they got past the San Antonio Spurs that they would make a push past this Houston Rockets team who, you know, by all accounts, we have to give James Harden much respect and much props, right? And also Dwight Howard, the former Orlando Magic, who basically is advancing, leaving Orlando, as well as any other teammate or former teammate has done once they leave Orlando. So all I got to say is, you know, what do we do now? what does the Clippers need to do to improve, because I thought this was a strong team. They looked like the best team. Once they faced off with San Antonio, they finally got over the hump, and they pretty much choked this series away. They was up 3-1.
They don't have a bench, and that's what I've been saying from the regular season. You know, starting five looks good, up from five down to six, maybe the seventh player. You know, Crawford and now Rivers is playing better, but outside of that, they don't have nothing else on the team. You know, Glenn Davis is only going to give you so much, and who else do you have after that? They don't have nobody else. So they don't have a bench. They need more better players, you know, come off the bench for them, because you can't just win it with just, you know, five or six guys. That's just not going to happen. And on top of that, being careless with the ball, like in the first, I think it was the first quarter, they had like nine turnovers the first quarter or the first half or whatever. You had half of your turnovers in the quarter. You're not going to win like that.
I'm going to tell you what was very disappointing for me, and I got to be honest with you, Lou, is I think they do have a bench, but it's like it's all guards, right? I mean, Crawford, J.J. Redick, and his son, they showed up in the series. But it's like that's all you have off the bench. Who do you have from a power or from? Oh, that's right, Redick. Well, you know, I gotta give Doc Rivers' son, you know, somewhat of a credit. He showed up in this series. He did about as well as he could do it coming into the situation. But I'm looking at the fact that they don't have any kind of big man, no power, no small forward to come onto the court, you know, to come in for Blake or even come in for Jordan to go ahead and add at least, you know, 9 to 10 points off the bench. Your bench, let's be real about it. Let's be realistic, Lou. You know, your bench has to average. If you're going to be a championship caliber team, they have to average at least 45 points, right? Is that fair to say? Your bench has to at least average 45 points. Your starter's going to give you between 60 to 65 points. Your bench should give you about 45 to 40 points a game, if you want to compete. Anytime you get below that number, which is a bit of analytics that I'm giving to you right now, you know, wink, wink, but for the most part, if you at least can get that out of your bench, you have a great opportunity and chance to win the game. And it's just, they failed on all cylinders when they came to that. But of course, when the bench, when it was a combination between Rivers and Crawford, when they was able to score over 20 points and 25 points, you look at the victories, they ended up winning. They won every one of those games. When they wasn't able to produce, that's when it went bad. And you can't put the game in the hand of just, you know, 2-3-point shooters. You need some size. You need people to come off the bench that can impose will. Matt Barnes, to me, he kind of failed. He didn't really live up to the villain this whole playoff. I think you got to get rid of, you got to let him go. I mean, he brings in the toughness, but that's it. Right? Let's be fair about it. You know, I watched him, and he did not really impress me on the offensive side of the ball, and really sometimes not on the defensive side of the ball either, besides giving a couple of cheap shots. So, you know, that's my takeaway from that. You know, I expected a lot more coming out of the Clippers, and, you know, Doc Rivers has to bear some of this responsibility. I think he didn't make good transitions or coach the game as well as he could have. I mean, you gave up multiple leads in the second half. Can't win series that way. I mean, they basically kept Houston in, and as a result, now they're advancing. So, you know, also now Houston, we've got a good matchup because we got it's a good matchup in the conference, and we'll get into that. But Lou, look at it. You got the MVP versus the second line MVP, and of course the other MVP candidate is over in the Eastern Conference. Excuse me. So I would say that, all in the day's work, right? But give me some feedback, Lou. I know.
Yeah, this game, that game, Houston pretty much had control of that game from the start. I don't think the Clippers, I look back on the highlights, I don't think the Clippers even had a lead once. Like I said, they were turning the ball over so much. And on top of that, when you have especially in game six towards the end when you have Josh Smith hitting big shots. And in this game, he hit big shots through most of the game. And Trevor Ariza being an offensive power, which
impressive.
He's not known to be.
Yeah.
You know, he's great on defense and he's all right on offense, but, you know, 22 points. That's something that you don't really expect that from Trevor Ariza. And you got Howard, who played a decent game. You know, Harden, you know, what we can say about Harden, he's doing what he always does, you know, playing under weather at that. And you had help from the bench. You know, Corey Brewer come off the bench, Pablo playing great defense coming off the bench, Jones as well. So, yeah, Houston, after I seen what happened in Game 6, I pretty much, you know, I didn't expect that Houston. I thought Houston would have a chance to win Game 6, but at the way that they won it, I pretty much wrapped it up for the Clippers because you can't give the game away like that. But that, again, goes to show that they don't have nobody on the bench playing for them. You can't have, especially in this game, you can't have one person scoring over 10 points and just two people only scoring one basket out of the rest of them.
And that they're going to have to fix that. They got to take that and make that better. But obviously, you know, it's going to take some off season, and maybe they could even get somebody off free agency to kind of fill that hole or fill that spot. I'm sure there'll be a couple of options out there on free agency looking forward and moving forward in the off season. But, you know, they let that go. They basically gave up the series. They had plenty of opportunity to make it interesting and do what they needed to do, and they just failed miserably. Let's just call it what it is, Lou. They failed to close the deal or seal it. So, you know, here they lose, and we got a good matchup. Now, I'm looking at, as we're getting into the matchups there, as I'm looking at the matchups, you know, the Golden State Houston Rockets matchup, it looked like Golden State swept them for the whole season, right? Beat them four times out of four. I think that's a bad matchup for the Rockets, but you know what? I think Dwight Howard is going to be a very integral part this time moving forward. I expect it to be a six-game series. I just think right now Golden State is just, they just hit their stride now. And, you know, I could easily say the Rockets probably hit their stride too, right? You know, they beat a real tough team that they was basically out of. They won three straight.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, the Clippers lost more of those than actually lost the game. You know, I think they kind of gave them with all the turnovers and some of the mistakes rather so than, you know, them actually winning like they did today. So I'm definitely going to say, I'm going to say Golden State in six games, four games or two. I think they'll win one. They'll win one in Houston. They'll win two in Houston. No, they won't. They'll win one in Houston. Golden State will win the next one. Then they'll lose the. So they'll win two in Houston. Golden State will go 2-0, 3-1. Okay, then they got to win in Golden State, don't they? I don't know how it's gonna work. I can't see six. Maybe I see five, Lou. I think I see five. That's what I see, Lou.
I think this is gonna be six.
And I think I can't argue with logic. So what I guess I'm gonna have to say, Lou, is that I see two in Golden State. I see two in Golden State, two in Houston, and then Golden State knocks out the last two. That's how I'm gonna say it's gonna go. Golden State.
I don't know. It's going to be six games, but I don't know who to pick out of this one. Because whatever Houston, regular season doesn't mean nothing. Regular season is regular season. Playoffs is a whole different thing. And even during the regular season, remember Dwight Howard wasn't even playing for them for most of that regular season. So now he's back playing.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the most interesting position because how is Bogut is going to play against Dwight Howard? And
we know what Bogut's going to do. Bogut is going to basically be you know, a 7-foot cone. He's just going to sit there and take up space. He's been a non-factor, if you ask me. It's really been Lee and some of the other guys that have really come, especially Iguodala, that have really sparked that Golden State team. Now Bogut, he's going to have to do something. you can't sit there and just let Howard dominate. Howard right now is playing pretty tough. I'm very impressed by what he's been able to do, and he's starting to make naysayers look kind of crazy. You know, they basically said he would never get an opportunity to make it back to a finals or even a conference championship. Remember we were saying that? Saying he didn't have the ability of leadership or he couldn't win, and here he goes. You pair him up with Harden. Comes playoff time, this guy's balling. I got to give it to him. As much as I despise his childish behavior at times, I must give him kudos for saying, hey, man, look, I'm going to dominate the paint. You take care of everything else. And it's working.
It's going to be tough, especially with certain players matching up. I mean, Klay Thompson can't do nothing on Harden. You know, he can't. He can't do nothing. Curry can't either. So Harden is going to have his way outside and posting up at that spot. And we already know Howard has his position locked down. I don't know about Josh Smith. I don't know if he's going to continue to play well like this. And we already know how Trevor Ariza is defensively. So even to get like a half decent offense from him with his great defense is even a plus for Houston. So it's going to be more interesting between him and Iguodala, because with Green, I don't know who is he going to play up on. He's going to match up with Josh Smith most likely, but what if Josh Smith gets it rolling and you have Ariza rolling at the same time? And on top of that, you got Brewer coming off the bench. So it's going to be
tough.
Yeah, it's weird how this is looking, because you know Livingston come off the bench, but is he gonna play defense on Brewer when he gets in, or is he gonna be playing defense on Harden? Because Terry starts at point guard, but majority of the time Harden plays point guard, and he plays really well at point guard. So I don't know. This one's a crazy one.
If I'm putting Thompson on Terry. And just go ahead and let Steph try to deal with Harden. They're gonna basically cancel each other out. Because just as well as Harden over there, you know, can't nobody stop him. Nobody can stop Steph either. And you know, Harden's defense has gotten better this season, but you know, we've seen what he can do. His defense can be a liability as well. Sometimes I think the beard weighs down his legs because he obviously doesn't do perfect on defense from time to time. So I think that's going to be a push. Thompson, I'm going to tell you, the key for Golden State is Thompson. Not Iguodala. Iguodala and Ariza are going to cancel each other out. You look at Corey Brewer, he gives you hustle. Draymond Green and what's my other man, Dad? My other big man for Golden State. They're going to basically be aggressive enough to cancel each other out. But the factors. It's like you say, Josh Smith for Houston, and then on Golden State, it's got to be Thompson. I think if Thompson gets on one of his hot streaks, if he shows out, they're going to be pretty tough to beat. And as I'm really kind of looking at this, this series could easily go to seven. I might need to really sit back before I make a decision and say something. I would just say this. I'm going to go six, but I could easily see this series going to seven. After, without question, absolutely, I could see this going seven games because, you know, right now Houston looks hot, right? They look pretty good. They really showed up and showed a determination to come back in that series. I thought it was dead in the water. And look, they just got revived back to life and did what they needed to do. And, man, I just got to tell you, I didn't see it. And Ariza got hot. I mean, he's not going to shoot 50% from the field or even three-point land all the time, most of the time. So I expect that to kind of tone down, but it's going to be tight.
Yeah. Plus,
it's going to be tight.
And plus, defensively, really defensively, Houston is more versatile with their players because they could run Harden at the point guard. Or even if they don't, you know, Trevor Ariza is the better defender, they could use him, you know, to play on Curry most of the time. And they won't hurt anything at that small forward position because they could just throw Corey Brewer in there. So they got more diversity going as far as defense goes because they're both long, they're both pretty much the same height. So
You know, so it sounds like you're going Houston.
It looks more like in Houston's favor. You know, defensive, they're playing great defensively, and if they continue to move the ball on offense like they have, like towards the end of Game 6 and pretty much the whole of Game 7, yeah, I'm gonna go with Houston. Plus, I still can't get over the fact of, you know, the front line advantage that, you know, Houston has with Howard over Bogut. I think that's gonna play a huge factor to them.
Why do they keep hanging on to Bogut? He's always injured. He doesn't show up. I don't understand what's the infatuation with him. But I guess, you know, he reminds me of four version of what's the lazy big guy, man, that plays for the Lakers long? Andrew Bynum. He reminds me of Andrew Bynum that's willing to play but can't. You hear what I'm saying? Does that make any sense? Like, Andrew Bynum doesn't want to play. Bogut wants to play, but he gives you the same result. So he doesn't show up enough, and
so
I'm just not a.
Less, he's less efficient than Tiago Splitter.
He is. He really is. I mean, at least Tiago Splitter gives you minutes. He's more. He's healthy more. Even though he was injured this season, but primarily, if you look at his track record, he has a better track record and better reputation of staying healthy and giving you, you know, absolutely dedicated hustle. And that's just not something we see with Bogut. He's just, to me, very inefficient. But then again, all he really needs to be is a big body and a big presence. I mean, you know, remember, Golden State does have a great defense, so it does bowl for them. I almost want to lean to a 7, but I'm going to just hold on to it for a second. I'm going to say Golden State in 6, and I might change that. I'm going to use the right to reserve the fact that I might change that. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to say Golden State. I guess we can go ahead and coast on to the other Eastern Conference finals, Cleveland and Atlanta. And, boy, that's a tough one for me to figure out right here, because it's like the Bulls took a whole bunch out of the, you know, Chicago Bulls. But, you know, what's really fascinating is the fact that everybody stepped up for them. You know what I mean? You know, Tristan and what's that point guard, man? The you know who I'm talking about? The foreign guy? Got his name.
Matthew Dellavedova.
Dellavedova, yes. That guy, man. Like, those guys stepped up. You got to look at it. You got no Kevin Love. Kyrie Irving's basically injured. Even LeBron tweaked his ankle. And it's like, man, those guys stepped up. They came into the game and really showed up and pretty much smashed the Bulls. I mean, broke their will for the most part. And it's like, man, they play together like that, they're going to be hard to beat. And I look at Atlanta, and I got to be saying that I'm guilty of not giving them enough credit where they should be getting credit, because that, let me tell you, that Brooklyn team was a tough team. You know, I hate to admit it, but down the stretch, they were playing phenomenal basketball, especially Brooke Lopez, what he was doing. Darren Williams basically showed up for just one game, but that team was playing good. Jared Jack was playing rough, and they beat him in 6. That was a tough matchup. And that would have been a tough matchup for anybody in the Eastern Conference. And then you look at the next series, I suspected that Washington Bullets team was the best team in the Eastern Conference. After seeing what they did to Toronto, they just, you know, pretty much slammed them and swept them, you know, gave them a broom. And I expected, you know, the Wizards to go ahead and, you know, figure out a way to just go ahead and beat them. And they didn't let up. I mean, they found with Kyle Korver. Horford, they just had a lot of hustle. And what's the other point guard's name? You know who I'm talking about.
Jeff Teague and Schroeder.
Jeff Teague. That guy, man. It's like that Atlanta team is a dangerous team. And I can see this game. I can see that series going to 7. I see that series going to 7 right here, Lou. I'm calling that game 7 games. I'm going Cleveland, though. I think Cleveland will seal the deal. in Atlanta in seven games. I think LeBron's will be too strong, and I think he'll manage to figure out a way to come out on top in that series. But that's what I suspect. What do you got?
Yeah, I'm kind of, you know what, I'm iffy on this one. I kind of want to go with Cleveland, but with Kyrie Irving, you know, injured, and I don't even know if he's going to even play in the first game. Now, if he doesn't play in the first game, Atlanta has to take advantage of that. And if they do take advantage of that, and the series will probably go to seven, I would see Atlanta winning. But not just because of that fact, but also another interesting fact of Cleveland's, you know, roster. You notice that there are two specific players that they picked up in the offseason and have not played yet or hasn't played much at all during these playoffs. And I'm particularly talking about Mike Miller and Sean Marion, both experienced playoff-tested players, consistent playoff players, and neither one of them are barely playing over 5 minutes. Miller barely plays over 5 minutes. I don't think Marion has even seen the floor yet in the playoffs. And he's not hurt.
I don't know.
I don't understand what the coach is doing over there on that fact. But.
Come on. Is he really the coach? I mean, calling timeouts on credit. He could have really ruined that. This series could easily be in that opposite direction, or even they could have lost someone. And, you know, David, you know, Black, I'm not going to go ahead and just ride him, but I'm just saying, listen, he's really not the cream here. We know this is LeBron's situation. He's practically the coach, and he's practically his determination to go ahead and take that last shot in game four basically is what boosted Cleveland over Chicago. Once he made that shot, we knew the series was over. Well, everybody else and their mother basically predicted it to be a foregone conclusion that was going to be done. You make an interesting point because as you really look at it, man, tantalizing here that, to say the least, when you look at what Sean Marion and what Mike Miller can do. Like, they also – and see, that's why Tristan Davis and Melanova, man, and those guys showed up. And I think that was itching to show up. And you put Marion on there, and he gives you complimentary defense and points. That's going to be, you know, somewhat of a hailstorm. Watch out. You know, bring out the umbrella. Get low because it's going to get nasty. And that's primarily what I see. I think it's going to be a small or short determination as to what's going to happen. It doesn't look good to me, though. I got to say.
That's what you brought those guys on the team for. When I first heard about those guys being on the team with Kevin Love, I said, okay, this is pretty much the best team in the East as far as playoff-wise goes. And since the playoffs started, those two players have barely even, you know, smelt the floor yet. I'm like, what is going on? They're both not hurt. Why are you not playing experienced playoff players? You know, experienced players that have won in the playoffs.
Yeah, the only thing I can say, I don't know why you don't have Marion on that, because he's like a young, older player, right? He still has spurts of energy and bursts of energy. Mike Miller, great shooter, but we know on defense, he's a liability. That's the only thing with him. You know, his defense is not what it used to be. Those back injuries kind of moves a little bit grandpa's. But, you know, if you get him out there in some space, he's going to burn you. And you just remember that 2 years ago when, you know, they was facing off against the San Antonio Spurs. Remember, he was the one really that kind of hurt him the most. Had him 24 points. I think he went, like 6 for 7? From the field, shot almost like 80% to 90% from the field. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen. But, you know, with all these injuries, I think you got to activate them and let them get some playing time if you expect to beat Atlanta. Atlanta's a pretty solid team. They play great defense. They move the ball around. They're basically an Eastern Conference version of what we see in San Antonio. So, you know, they cannot afford to make mistakes or make the mistake or, you know, come up with the assumption that they can stop them doing what they've been doing with the Bulls. I doubt that's going to work.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so, you know, some big primetime matchups. It's looking somewhat, you know, pretty tight. It's going to be some good games, I suspect. And it's going to be interesting to watch. I did want to make this little quick note, Lou, that when you look at, I'll have to reevaluate college basketball, Florida team, the two that won the championships. Man, you really look at that team and look at what these players are doing in the NBA. You know, you got Brewer, you got Noah, you got Horton. You know, bro, those guys were on the court at the same time. You know, defensively, that hurts, right? Of course, Green didn't make it, and I can't remember the other guy, but typically, man, you look at that Florida team just with those three and what they bring to a team. It's like they're really strong role players, but they was combined on one team. And, I remember that team. You know, they would shut down teams defensively. They would just shut them down, suffocate them to where they couldn't put up any points. Remember Greg Oden, when he was playing for Ohio State at the time, was a beast. He was unstoppable. You know, and Oden, I mean, had it not been for injury for him, who knows what he could have been? Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
And this, I mean, because he was, I remember him in Portland for a small period there when he was starting to catch his stride. He was starting to look formidable. And just bad karma, man. Those knees went, feet went. Is he still in the league? Is he still playing for Miami's roster, or is he done?
He's out the league. He's working to try to get back, but he's not on the roster now.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
All that upside, and it's like, man, it didn't turn out. But he, you know, he's very formidable, and it was very, very, how would I say, enticing to see if he would have never gotten injured. But, you know, he was in his prime in Florida, basically. They neutralized him, but he still put up his points. But you look at that Florida team, the defense they had, they were suffocating teams. Teams couldn't breathe, couldn't get to the basket, couldn't smell it. And just wanted to go ahead and state that fact in the situation. Also wanted to say this, too, you know, in regards to golf, because I look here, Rory McIlroy wins another championship this second. Let me tell you something. Tiger Woods, is he done? Is he finished? Is it a wrap?
How long ago did I tell you that?
Yeah, you did. You did. I said, I was just trying to, I guess I'm like most people trying to hold our hope, because you can't imagine that much greatness just falling and failing the way it's been. Like he has not looked like himself at all. Not even remnant. Mm-hmm. I think he won what a couple last season. I can say it wasn't this season, but it was last season. He did look somewhat decent. He was winning the other tournaments, just wasn't really placing high in the majors. But he was winning championships on the golf course last season. I think it was 2014 or 2013, one of those recent times. But have you seen a bigger fall from grace than him? Has there ever been one like his?
Yeah, I can recall.
Where it stems from. Yeah, you know. It basically stems from his infidelity. Kid caught. He gets beat up. His car runs into a tree. And he hasn't been the same since. It's a wrap. Yeah. It's the truth. We can't lie to ourselves and say that's not the fact. Those are the facts. Ever since that situation, he has not recovered. And we're going on, what, like 4 or 5 years now? It seems like it happened yesterday, right? It's been four or five years now.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Watch out for that tree.
Take certain things. Hey, you got to take certain things into consideration. Ask yourself, is it really worth it? Look at that. He was worth $1 billion, lost half of that, and I think he still regained some of his wealth afterward. But it's like, look, you have a split family, all of these different things that are going wrong. And that's what's taking place, you know. But hey, what can we say? We just can only enjoy the sports and athletics. And college football, also want to go over this. You know, Marcus Golson, Emmett Golson is his name, former quarterback for Notre Dame. To me, looked stand up, looked really solid. Notre Dame came out of the blocks ranked, you know, top five, top three. When they faced off against Florida State, lost that game, probably should have won. As you know, Jameis Winston found a way to overcome. And later on in the season, what most people didn't know is that Everett Golston basically got benched. And now he graduated from, you know, Notre Dame with his degree, and he has the ability to transfer and play for somewhere else. And more than likely, it seems like he's going to be playing for Florida State. So it's like, man, let me tell you something. This is how you know you have a great program, right? It's like every year you reload, right, Lou? You have a championship contending team every season. That's what we call, you know, spectacular program, top-notch coaching, and that's what we've been witness to in Florida State over the past few years here, ever since Bowden, you know, retired. Already, you know, they turned the whole game, you know, they've turned that organization or that program around. I remember you had, what's the guy? I can't remember the guy. The quarterback for Florida State, EJ Manuel. That's who he is. Went to, remember, Buffalo, basically is going to more than likely be a career backup. Went, won like 11-1. They won 10 games, 11 games, and then 11 games with E.J. Manuel at quarterback. Then James Winston comes in. They win all the games, win the championship, beat the SEC, first team to stop the SEC from 8 straight championships. Comes back this year. They basically lost one game, made it to the, you know, college football playoffs, lost to Oregon, but it wasn't his fault. They just seem to reload every season since Jimbo Fisher's taken over. And, you know, their recruiting is almost just as strong as Bama's recruiting. And we know what Nick Saban does in the SEC and in college football. And now, here it is. You have Everett Golston, a guy that literally outplayed Winston in that game, by the way. And he's coming to your program off of a trade. Not a trade. What do they call that when you transfer? That's what they do. Alpha transfer. He's going there, and he's going to be the starting quarterback for Florida State. He's going to make his decision. He visited Georgia. He visited a few other schools, but on the top of the list was Florida State, and they have a lot of people coming back. Winston is gone. Some of their receivers are gone, but everybody else that was young, youthful talent is there to be supportive of the team. He's coming into a solid situation. Jimbo Fisher looks like a genius. How do you combat that? You know, does it seem like to me, because I was watching college football last season, it seems like to me that the SEC is starting to lose a little bit of steam, right? You look at the championship. Big Ten comes in. Urban Meyer goes to Ohio State, knocks off everybody, right? It's a surprise to everybody. Knocks off Bama, turns around, knocks off Oregon, wins the championship, and it was in the making ever since he's been over there. Now you got Jim Harbaugh going to Michigan. They're going to, you know, kill those states with recruiting. Lou, I mean, take a good look at it. You know, SEC, they like to boast and brag, but it doesn't look too promising for them in the next few seasons there. And I look at the SEC, they don't have any quarterbacks over there. I mean, who do they have? Blake Sims is gone, and he wasn't that great to begin with. Who's coming in behind him? Bama has no quarterback. They have defense. They don't have any quarterback. I look at Mississippi State, Dax, and I don't like what I saw from him. I mean, he looked like probably a Tim Tebow, you know, part C, not even B. Not even as good as his carbon copy. He's more or less of a B copy or a C copy. And they don't have anything, you know, offensively to make you feel squirmish about anything. I just don't see it. So I'm looking at it, and you, the Pac-12, man, let me tell you something. USC is going to be a power. Be prepared for that. Oregon is still going to be Oregon. They might have lost Mariota, but that team still is, we're returning a ton of talent. You got Michigan. You got Ohio State. Michigan State looks strong. Florida State's going to be pretty good. And who else knows that, you know, what's going on over there in the ACC? Some of those teams are going to step up, too. Clemson, maybe, some of these other colleges. And I'm looking at the SEC. You don't have a quarterback. Who are you going to bring in? You got to have a quarterback, right? Baylor, yep. They're not going anywhere. TCU, those teams are strong. TCU proved to us that they're really something serious. They blew out Ole Miss 42-3 last season. And Ole Miss beat Bama. So, they better be cautious. Because I'm starting to see things turn around in a different direction. It does look good for them. And That's primarily what I've been seeing. So before we leave off, Luke, give us our last comment. Just had to state those two things. Our last topic for tonight.
Well, we're coming down to the close to the end of the NBA playoffs. We got the conference finals coming up. Also, I watched the second day of the combine, and yeah, pretty much the same stuff. You know, I hate combines. I can't say that enough. It really serves no real purpose. Yeah, now they're having the more. It's more for the players, you know, to get their spots. You know, just to get people to look at them for the draft, not even get on teams, but for the draft itself. But other than that, it's just pointless. It's pointless on both ends, whether to look for talent in players and also use it the wrong way as far as a guy you've been watching his whole college career, with, even if it's just for one season, or you have players that's playing on there for two or three seasons. And if they don't show up right for the combine, all of a sudden, oh, their draft stock drops to the second round, or probably you don't pick them at all just because of that one day. That really has nothing to do with what they've been doing in college the whole time, which is the reason why you went to scout them in the first place.
See, let me tell you something. And we were talking about this is a good way to go ahead and chop up and put it in, bring this to a close. But spend a little time on this here. You talk about combines and what, how it relates or translates to a product of what when you look at prime time, right? You know, in every situation, the NBA combine, I suspect, is not, I'm not going to say it is affected as much as the NFL combine. NBA combine, yeah, you know, you have a couple of players, but let me tell you something. Like I say, those situations in both cases cannot account for a person's ability to play on the floor or on the field. You get what I'm saying? Like, you could have had a guy who was a solid player his whole career. Doesn't really give you a reason to doubt him when you watch him play. And yet, when he doesn't measure up in these combines or these trials, they tend to fall down or fall in ranks. And it's like, what is going on here? You're basing it on a performance on a day where he's not even wearing pads, or it's basically doesn't count how high he can jump. There's probably a whole bunch of guys that can jump out of the gym. Can you play within the system, though? Do you play with heart? Yep. And that's what I think, you know, the combine, it's just so much emphasis is on it, more so in the NFL, and I know it. And, you know, that's been a primary issue with me. I like to watch the whole, you know, the ambiance of it, right, the whole setup of it. Yeah, you know, New York City, Town City Hall, or even in Chicago this year, House of Blues, or whatever the case may be, everybody lines up. You have Mel Kiper and some of these guys come on and break down film and give you different reasons as to why this player is going to fit great with this team and why he'll be top of the big board. And you watch it. And like you say, man, it's like a meat shop. You know, they get pumped up. They get swole. They lose all their fat, exhaust themselves for like 12 hours straight over for a week leading up to the actual combine. Then they get there, and it's like, okay, they don't perform where they underperform, so whatnot, you drop them? And, you know, that's what they do. It's, to me, it's just another way really not to give players money. Because we've seen these players. They know whether they'll transition a lot for the most part. Or maybe I should take that back and say maybe they don't do. They don't have any idea because you look at some of the picks and how they pan out. They really don't pan out. They only predict some of the right situations a few times, but to actually let the combine itself determine whether the person's going to translate or not. I mean, what about Tom Brady? What about Joe Montana? What about some of these great quarterbacks a long time? Now, you know Dan Marino was a late first-round pick.
Yeah.
Late first-round pick. We know Aaron Rodgers pushed back to late first-round in favor of Alex Smith. What are we doing, basing it on? Do you know Jamarcus Russell had one of the best combines in history? They say he had the highest rating, best workout in football history, or one of the few, and as far as the combine history is concerned. And look what happened. the guy's a bust. So it's like, you know, I understand you have measurables and you have certain things that you got to test, certain things that are necessary, but I think they go overboard with it. And like you say, it's not interesting. I would rather see, you know, more gameplay, more actual workout than what I'm seeing in the combine, how high you can jump. And you think about it, in basketball, you need to know those things, right? You know, jumping could impact rebounds and defense and offensive rebounds. So that could drastically affect the game. But I don't see where it serves a purpose in the NFL. I mean, what? Nobody's going to be jumping. You're not going to be running 40 yards straight if you're a lineman or anybody else. I think we need to just get rid of the lineman running, you know, the 40-yard dash. What's the point? They'll never run 40 yards in the actual game. Unless it's a fumble recovery, which usually happens maybe one time a whole season, if that. But that's just my rant about that. That's kind of what I see. Anything to add to that before we close it?
Well, that's it on that. Also, there's one more thing I came across on YouTube before the show started, and I want you to see this video as well. The guy's name is Jordan Kilgannon. Or Kilgannon, I can't pronounce his last name properly, is K-I-L-G-A-N-O-N. And he's from Canada. He's 6'1". And this guy is the most creative dunker I've ever seen. This last dunk I've seen him do is called Lost and Found. And when you see him, when you initially see him do it, you understand why it's called that, because when you see him in the air, he's doing a 360 in the air, but when he's spinning, you're looking confused, like, where did the ball go? And then all of a sudden, you see the ball pop up from behind him while he's in the air spinning and catches it and dunks it.
What's his name?
Jordan Kilgannon.
Jordan. See, this is what I say. Like, players like that, I want to see them in the NBA, because at least we can have an entertaining slam dunk contest. Unlike what we've been seeing for the past decade now. So, plus, I think some of those guys would be great players to come off the bench, don't you? It's like they play with a whole bunch of energy, and I don't see why a lot of coaches don't translate that. But anyway, I'm gonna check the videos out, give it a look, and we'll go ahead and bring that into the conversation on Thursday. So, but go ahead and leave them. Lou, it's best that we just leave them with beautiful music, because we're beautiful people with beautiful topics. So it's only right that we leave with beautiful music. You're Lumatic. I'm Marlon, the Magician. And, of course, this is Sports Lounge. Bringing it to you again. We'll leave them off with that. Signing away. Peace.